Okay. Well, all right. Hi, everybody. And we'll be continuing now with program number 65 in the externalization of the hierarchy. I think we're going to be entering some very important material here. This is the WASAC message. Preparation for the WASAC Festival, April and May, 1946. Really just 3 years before Alice Bailey passed on, and also a time very close to the time when the Tibetan stopped regular communications with the group. There were some irregular communications of importance, but not the regular ones, because the group had shown that it was not possible for him to continue. So we're on page 541. I have delayed writing my usual WASAC message until this late date, because of a certain event in the hierarchy which was maturing and which necessitated my entire attention. So we see that he indeed was involved in whatever this event may have been. Did it take him by surprise? Was it something unexpected? This event was connected with the WASAC Festival. Let's see. Just a quick Okay. This event was connected with the WASAC Festival and involved, among other matters, the formation of a new ashram in which the wisdom aspect would be of particular importance and not the love aspect. Okay, now that's the point. And many people have seized upon this, you know, as the so-called ashram of synthesis, at least the wisdom aspect was involved very strongly. And would that necessarily involve Master DK? Well, perhaps it would. This ashram would also be related in a peculiar manner to the Buddha. All right, that's something that is often, I think, forgotten. I think, you know, my impression is it's very important to take in what is being said here, but to do it in a way that is not glamorous. It had to be formed at this time in order to be the recipient and then the custodian of certain endowments which the Buddha will bring at the time of the May full moon. So there was a special type of transmission going on there in 1946. I mean, we could look up the time, but it looks like, you know, the month of May, in which we find most generally tropical Taurus, not sidereal Taurus. The endowments concern the will to good of the Lord of the world, the Ancient of Days, though they do not concern goodwill as you understand that phrase. So it's a very high matter that is being formulated here in hierarchy, a high issue. This ashram, when duly formed, it's in process apparently at that time, and established will enable the members of the hierarchy to respond to the divine, this aspect of divine purpose, the purpose which, as you know, lies behind and implements the plan. Okay. Everything said here is very important and very helpful in avoiding the glamours which so easily arise when something new comes into existence and people tire of what to them is the old and yet unassimilated and unapplied truth. So it has not yet, at least at this time, been duly established, not yet. And note, will allow members of the hierarchy to respond to this aspect of the divine purpose. Remember how in that tabulation he brought in the factors will first related to Shambhala and purpose specifically related to hierarchy. I wonder if I can find it quickly. It'd be worth looking at again. There it is. So, will, purpose, and plan. Right. And these are the three in sequence. Will, purpose, and plan. All right. Purpose has, of course, a connection with the monad, but it has something we might call the second aspect in relation to the first. This ashram related to the Buddha, so therefore very high, you know, the Buddha being a sixth-degree initiate in process of taking the seventh degree, as is the Christ, this ashram related to the Buddha will be specifically under the close supervision of the Christ and also of the Lord of civilization, the Master R. They are the only two members of the hierarchy able to register the divine purpose in regard to its immediate objectives in such a manner that the entire hierarchy can be informed and can then work unitedly and intelligently at its implementation. So this is very mysterious, and this particular paragraph stands out when compared to many other things said about this wisdom ashram. Related to the Buddha and thence to wisdom and light, it will be specifically under the close supervision of the Christ, and the friends of the Christ are on the wisdom aspect. So the Tibetan says that he numbers himself among the humblest of the friends of the Christ, thereby advising us that he is closely related to the wisdom aspect, but that does not mean that the love aspect is missing or that the factor of detailed knowledge in which he is such an expert is somehow missing. Another Reitu factor. Until the close supervision, under the close supervision of the Christ and also the Lord of Civilization, the Master R, they are the only two members of the hierarchy able to register the divine purpose. Now, whereas most ashrams that we might be affiliated with are connected with a master, let us say, such as Master DK, this ashram is connected with two of the three great lords. You kind of wonder why the Manu is not included as one of the three great lords of the hierarchy, and the Buddha, who is a resident of Shambhala and beyond the usually considered hierarchical status. He's an intermediary between hierarchy, or between Shambhala and hierarchy. They are the only two members of the hierarchy able to register the divine purpose in regard to its immediate objectives in such a manner that the entire hierarchy can be informed and then work unitedly and intelligently at its implementation. So I think the thing that has always impressed me is that this is a very high ashram. And it seems to consist more of masters than of ordinary aspirants and disciples, who I think should, you know, attend to a kind of membership which is much more likely for them, not a membership in something so high, and not dignify themselves with any kind of speciality or specialness, or give any kind of unusual reason why they and not others should be members of this wisdom ashram. More than this, I may not tell you about this particular hierarchical move, affecting as it does both Shambhala and hierarchy. Very important, and I'll say why in a minute. And not at least in this statement, humanity. So it affects Shambhala and hierarchy. And I think aspirants who are excited about this prospect and move to say many things about it should realize that they are still not even initiates of the third degree. And many not even initiates of the second degree. And so there is a lack of correct proportion here, with an exaggeration, I believe, of status. So this section really must be pondered, because the Buddha was giving the endowments, and he is a Shambhalic being, and the recipients are definitely hierarchical, and almost certainly not initiates of the threshold of the first two degrees, if that. The Waisak festival is of supreme importance because it is the first festival since the war ended, because it takes place at a time when a definite orientation of the hierarchy will take place, and because a fresh tide of spiritual impulse and directed second-ray energy will flood the entire hierarchy. These, you know, are the forces of enlightenment which are so profoundly active at the time of the Waisak Festival. So it's this Waisak Festival, and instead if by mistake I said this one, the one that is being noted in this message from 1946. The first since the war ended. So humanity can move from a state of tenseness into the proper point of tension, And because it takes place at a moment of orientation of the hierarchy towards Shambhala in a new way, I suspect, and because a fresh tide of spiritual impulse bringing in the secondary energy will flood the entire hierarchy. The work, therefore, to be done by the hierarchy will be far more effective. This you may anticipate, and on this you may count. After all, the forces of obstruction had been temporarily cleared away, even though, you know, they are going through a kind of fight to the last ditch at this point, and will not be banished from planetary interference for a long time. But still, they were definitely driven back at this time, even though the door where evil dwells had not been completely sealed. But as you may well have surmised, it is the full moon of June, which is this year the season of prime and outstanding importance. And, you know, we call this festival of the Christ. It is in many ways easier for the Western believers and esotericists to tune in and participate in the activities of the hierarchy when closely connected with the Christ than it is in those related to the Buddha. Well, that makes sense because the Christ is the great teacher of the West. So 1946, the June full moon of outstanding importance. The main intention in these early stages of keeping the Eastern Festival of Waisak is to familiarize the Western world with the fact of the presence of the Buddha and with his activities in connection with humanity. Obviously, until we find ourselves associated with the Bali teaching and the theosophical teaching, there's very little that we Westerners have known, if anything at all, about the Waisak Festival. Such great progress has, however, taken place in the spiritual development of humanity that the Buddha need no longer continue with his task unless he so desires, even then, 1946, and then only for a period of years known to him and the Lord of the world. And that this raises a big question. Has the Buddha desired thus to continue from a period 74 years ago, let us say now? And if he at the time desired to continue, did the term of that continuance expire? As there seems to be a term, because the Tibetan says, and then only for a period of years known to him and the Lord of the world. He could cease his annual contact with the hierarchy at this time, if he so chose, owing to the direct contact now established between hierarchy and Shambhala. And this is an inter-hierarchical matter, and it's the reason that we should bear in mind as to why the Buddha could discontinue even at that point some 74 years ago. He could cease his annual contact with the hierarchy at this time, if he so chose, owing to the direct contact now established between hierarchy and Shambhala. Now, we do find hierarchy reaching out to Shambhala at this period. And even now, perhaps we do not have the complete contact we will have before long. And this is the real reason why the Buddha could discontinue. Somehow, Shambhala is so infusing the hierarchy more and more increasingly that hierarchy can offer the energies bestowed in a transformed form to humanity, and humanity can be sufficiently stimulated without necessarily experiencing that type of intervention by the Buddha, as the Waysak intervention. What I try to emphasize is that the Buddha is very much with the Christ, very much with hierarchy as one of the points in the triangle surrounding the Christ. So his energy is very much supportive of the Christ who is reappearing and therefore does reach humanity in a very powerful way. This, however, he does not immediately choose to do. For a few decades longer, he will cooperate with the Christ in widening the channel of contact between Shambhala, the hierarchy, and humanity. And after that, this is really important. After that, he will proceed to his own place in the solar hierarchy and will no longer visit the Himalayas annually, as has been his custom for so many centuries. A deeply occult fact that we in the West have been unaware of. So a few decades, now what's that, 1946 to 1975, I wonder. Mary Bailey thought it was 1981. And yet in 1975, there was another Shambhala impact. And it would seem perhaps a perfect time for the augmentation of the influence of Shambhala force within the hierarchy, the very thing of which DK speaks as the reason that the Buddha could discontinue his annual visit to the Himalayas. Now, he's in the solar hierarchy, I guess, when you are a steadfast member of Shambhala, somehow you are in the solar hierarchy, not just a planetary life. The word solar seems important here. So what really is the status of the Buddha? He's somehow said to be still a member of Shambhala, and that is for a time being his place, and then later in the Aquarian Age, he and the Christ will pass before the Lord of the world and be initiated, and if it's the seventh initiation, the planetary logos in a fuller way will be involved as the initiator. At least that's what we are told in initiation human and solar. So these are very important matters regarding how we conduct ourselves, what we expect, how we attempt to receive the Buddha's energy, whether or not at this time it's mediated by the Christ and the hierarchy through the vestures of the Buddha, let us say, or whether the Shambhala impact is direct. I think what's important to realize is that the Shambhala influence is here with us, and more we will understand what the divine will really is. Whether or not it's due to the annual visit in the Himalayas or due to some other principle of transmission, we will experience the Buddha as representing Shambhala, just as the avatar of synthesis and the spirit of peace represent energies that are extra planetary. The Eastern festival of Vaisakha, as it is called in the East, yes, and the Christian day of remembrance, Good Friday, will fade out, and the consciousness of humanity in due time. They are both festivals related to aspects of the first ray of will or power. The abolition of the fear of death and the establishment of a close relation of the hierarchy with Shambhala will render obsolete these ancient ceremonial rites. They will be replaced by something even more effective. And maybe some of us hang on to the Vaisakha festival and certainly to Good Friday, you know, at least among the believing Christian who uses a sixth ray approach and celebrates somehow the death of Jesus and followed by his resurrection. But the spirit of resurrection, of course, that's Easter, will be deeply celebrated. And with the Pentecost will be considered festivals of the future. So let's somehow bear this in mind as well. And whether or not the Buddha is these days returning in the way he has for centuries, his influence is still profound and I would say growing during the Aquarian age, in which the energies of Taurus involving Shambhala will also be very strong. In this message, I would like to consider with you primarily the festival of the Christ, held at the time of the full moon of June, and the work of the Christ as he prepares himself for the fulfillment of his true mission on earth. Okay. So, really, the Tibetan dropped a spiritual bomb here in the first part of this message, putting us on the alert that, well, by this time anyway, the Vaisakha may well be discontinued in the form that it has taken for so many centuries. We don't know when it began, but DK tells us for centuries. And remember, there was a great clearing, a great cleaning, a ridding of the obstructive forces of evil following the World War II, the end of the Great War, 1914 to 1945, and hierarchy would be liberated for deeper work, preparatory in relation to Shambhala and in relation to humanity, and deeply esoteric regarding the infusion of the Shambhala force into hierarchy. The Christian Church has so distorted that mission and ruthlessly, you know, there's Mars and the sixth ray, and Scorpio, ruthlessly perverted the intention for which he, the Christ, originally manifested, that a consideration of that mission is, maybe a reconsideration of that mission is deeply needed and should be revolutionary in its effects. And I'm sure that with the Bailey teaching, many Christians who could transit into a deeper esoteric knowledge of the true facts behind the scenes have benefited. Okay. So this is part of the abandoning of the Good Friday issue, the real resurrection as the seventh initiation will be taught, and the gold and silver threads of the Christ Jesus interplay will be more deeply understood. And this will be a great shock and awakening to many conventionally oriented Christians who are very likely to reject all this as nonsense and as heresy at first. But, you know, in time, the facts will be established. So, changes in the Waisak Festival and the progress of the Buddha. The Buddha, we know, chose the path of earth service maybe 2,500 years ago. And it wasn't his path at all. But he had this powerful love of humanity and great compassion, and that's why he remained. Now it looks like he will be moving on to his place in the solar hierarchy. And since we're dealing with the issue 74 years after this article was written, very likely that he has done that. Unless, of course, there were issues about which we don't know, and there are so many of those issues. If he desired, he could remain. He did so desire, and apparently he remained for a term. Would it be possible for him to remain beyond that term? That is at least impossible for us to say. The thing that we do have to keep in mind, however, is that he is very influential from whatever high place he occupies in the redemption of humanity. Starting with St. Paul, this is page 543, the theologians interpreted Christ's words, his words, in such a manner that they served to bridge the gap between the spiritual future of the world and the Jewish dispensation which should have been passing out. It probably should not have been carried on into the age of Pisces, but passed out in the age of Aries. So this, in this particular case, bridging was not desirable because there were so many undesirable factors in the old dispensation. As has sometimes been said, without specific reference, the blood religion of the Jews. Anyway, there was an attempt to reconcile Christianity with the Grecian approach, with the Jewish approach. I don't know what other approaches, but to take it as to take it on its own merits, its simplicity, its love, its clarity, this was not done. So effective has been their work, this bridging work, that the teachings of the loving, simple Son of God have been largely ignored. The failure of Christianity can be traced to its Jewish background, emphasized by St. Paul, which made it full of propaganda instead of loving action, which taught the blood sacrifice instead of loving service, and which emphasized the existence of a wrathful God needing to be placated by death, and which embodied the threats of the Old Testament Jehovah, you know, a lunar god of a Martian nature, which embodied the threats of the Old Testament Jehovah in the Christian teaching of hellfire. And that has been adopted also by Islam. So what had been hoped was not achieved. You know, you cannot pour new wine into old bottles, and we had some old bottles here that were definitely preserved and tainted the taste and the value of the new wine. So, distortion. And of course, Paul has that karma upon him and will have to do something about it, and maybe has been doing something about it, because he did bring forward one of the most beautiful definitions of love, overflowing with the Buddhic nature. He seems to have realized that legalistic reconciliation of the old with the new has not been of value. And many Christians have been swayed away from the kinds of thoughts and actions which should have oriented them, had the loving and simple words of the simple Son of God been realized for what they were and followed. So this is an unfortunate distortion, along with many distortions which came from the imposition of personal ideas upon the doctrine of Christianity, and many forgeries and many eliminations and insertions into the Christian doctrine, which really didn't belong there at all. This situation is one which the Christ is seeking to alter. It has been in preparation for his instituting a new and more correct presentation of divine truth that I have sought with love and understanding to point out the faults of the world religions with their obscure theologies and their lack of love, and to indicate, he says it boldly here, the evils of Judaism, at least I would say as it was practiced by so many in the Orthodox approach. Obviously, there are among the Jews those who are of a reform mentality and are more loving and ethical in their approaches. There are many values there, but the Orthodox, that's what he's going to say here, really. The present world faiths must return to their earlier simplicity, and Orthodox Judaism, with its deep-seated hate, well, he must be speaking as a master who sees, you know, must slowly disappear. Note the word slowly. All must be changed in preparation for the revelation which the Christ will bring. And there have been, you know, in Judaism, certain movements, rather mystical, maybe this Jews for Jesus movement, probably calling upon their past and their familiarity with the Rabbi Jesus in his day. He was even earlier, we know, Joshua, the high priest, in the Jewish faith, in the temple, presumably, at Jerusalem. So preparation for new approaches, especially to the Abrahamic religions, is underway. And even Buddhism, the Tibetan tells us, tends to become more dogmatic. If we can understand that, maybe not being so versed in Buddhism, but there is a crystallization occurring and a clinging for dear life onto familiar forms because people are so frightened to move ahead into new presentations of the truth. They imagine that their presentation is the last to appear, the last legitimate presentation, certainly, which is simple-minded, of course, and stultifying. And all the Abrahamic religions, including Christianity in its Old Testament reference, are characterized by this idea that the last word has been spoken. The first thing which the Christ will do, beginning with this full moon in June 1946, will be to prepare all people everywhere, if possible, through their regenerated religious institutions, and there have to have been some, for the revelation for which humanity waits. Now, this is an interior activity of the Christ. He was not at this time, and nor is he yet, teaching visibly in the midst of the human race. It is this revelation. Well, you know, we expect more light on the deeply esoteric truths of spirituality. We expect that much will be revealed, including the immortality of the soul, the survival from the body, you know, many things, reincarnation. In the book, The Reappearance of the Christ, D.K. goes over what may be the Christ's teaching. It is this revelation which lies behind all the activities which now engross the attention of the hierarchy. A revelation that, whether conscious or unconsciously, consciously or unconsciously, humanity awaits. So to bring the revelation forward, this is engrossing the attention of hierarchy at that time, and I imagine that still it is the case. There have been many revelations of divine purpose down the ages, each of which uniquely altered the point of view and the pattern of living for men everywhere. So maybe he'll detail a few of these, because we progress by means of recognized revelations. It's possible that revelations may come and not be recognized at all, at least not by a sufficient majority. There was the ancient revelation given through the people of India as to the existence of the self and the not-self, a revelation which is now coming to have meaning through the teaching of modern psychology. So, you know, he's talking about the growing fourth force psychology involving a transcendent self and the new more detailed, energetically detailed psychology that he presents as esoteric psychology. There was the revelation of the Ten Commandments given through the Jews, and because of the negativity shown then and today by the Jews, and that's, you know, quite a while ago, given in such a negative and not positive form, so it was given, there was the revelation of the Ten Commandments given through the Jews, and because of the negativity shown then and today by the Jews, given in a negative and not positive form. Yes, of course, the receiving instrument has to be considered. The Christ endeavored to offset and to bring to an end the need for the Ten Commandments by giving the 11th commandment concerning love, you know, loving one's neighbor and the Lord God, loving the Lord God and one's neighbor as oneself. You shall love one another. Well, okay. That was not mentioned, and the second ray historically is not much found in the astrological factors and rays of the Jewish group. I guess Virgo does rule the soul of Judea, and there is the hope that second ray can enter. I guess the Tibetan is speaking very somehow straightly here. And in the book, The Reappearance of the Christ, he talks about other teachers and other revelations. There was the revelation which Christ himself gave, summing it up for us in his life of service, in the love which he preached, and in his constant repudiation of theological Judaism, the Sadducees and the Pharisees. He was rebuked for healing on the Sabbath, and he found the right thing to say about the work of the Lord. So he did not abide by the superficial strictures. He did want to fulfill the law, especially the essential laws. But he was not for all the observances. What are there? 600 and something dietary laws present in Orthodox Judaism? I'll have to study that, but a great number, which certainly are not adaptive to the modern age. This difficulty with Judaism still persists and is symbolized for us in the failure to recognize the Messiah when he came to them in their own country, and let it be known that he came to the whole world and not to the Jews alone. That was the, you know, sort of a ownership factor. They were looking for someone who would overthrow the Romans and liberate Judea, liberate the tribes, liberate Israel. But his mission was far broader and was not recognized for what it was. I think there have been many modifications now, however, through the reformed movement in Judaism since this time this letter or article has been written. For this new revelation, the Christ is preparing, as are all the members of the hierarchy, from the highest Chohan down to the humblest disciple. And it is for this that all the ashrams are getting ready. The revelation which Christ will bring. Because, you know, he is still the world teacher. He fulfills other functions as well now, teaching is one of them. And on page 518, it tells us of his function as the Savior and as a divine psychologist. So the revelation is what we're talking about here. Prepare people everywhere, if possible, through their regenerated religious institutions, not leaving himself really much time there, for the revelation which we all, even if unconsciously, await. It is for this also that in a weak and feeble manner, Christian people, those of the other world faiths and spiritually minded people are likewise preparing. And we could say if unbeknownst to themselves. Therefore, we have isolated, if I may use such a word, three activities to which the Christ is at this time dedicated. 75 years ago, and let's see, would his dedication to these activities continue, or have they been accomplished? Have they been somehow accomplished? Number one, the reorganization of the world religions, if in any way possible, and sometimes it seems like it is not possible, so that their out-of-date theologies, their narrow-minded emphasis, and their ridiculous belief that they know what is in the mind of God may be offset, in order that the churches may eventually be the recipient of spiritual inspiration. Well, we still have so many churches. I remember a time long ago when I was invited to a evangelical church, and it was a neighbor who invited me in. I had to, I felt like I was in disguise, you know. I was a reader of theosophy and maybe less broad-minded than I am now. And I had to kind of see what was going on there and participate in a certain way and simply endure. So, three activities to which the Christ is dedicated at that time, 1946. So the reorganization of the world religions, in some ways this has been done, and the great consciousness movement has brought forward different approaches to Christianity and the emergence of mystical approaches, let us say, which are much broader and sensitive and inclusive than the narrow hellfire and brimstone approach of the very orthodox approaches. Number two, the gradual dissolution, gradual again, slow and gradual, again, if in any way possible, of the orthodox Jewish faith, with its obsolete teaching, its separative influence, its hatred of the Gentiles, and its failure to recognize the Christ. Well, you know, when reading this, it should conservative and orthodox Jews read this, they will not read it with a welcoming and receptive attitude. I don't think so. because it calls for the dissolution of that which they think may be the only approach to God. In saying this, says the Tibetan, I do not fail to recognize those Jews throughout the world who acknowledge the evils and who are not orthodox in their thinking, you know, rigidly confined to dogmatic thinking. They are not that. They belong to the aristocracy of spiritual belief to which the hierarchy itself belongs. And that has to be, that's an interesting phrase, the aristocracy of spiritual belief. And they are, after all, so many of them very old souls with a vast experience, often experience not only on the moonshine, but maybe even taking back to the previous solar system. So the Tibetan is fair-minded in this, and he's only talking about the rigidities of orthodoxy, which must be dispensed with. And then number three, preparation for a revelation which will inaugurate the new era and set the note for the new world religion. What might that be? For a revelation which will inaugurate the new era and set the note for the new world religion. So this is what the Christ was focusing upon in those days. And we ask, is he still focusing upon these? Has progress been made? Three activities to which the Christ is at this time dedicated, and maybe even now, and maybe up to the time of his reappearance. Reorganizing the world religions, certainly the conventional conservative religions are in many ways losing their attendance, but there is a dangerous recrudescence, arising again of a very faith-driven theologies which are narrow-minded and which are also militant and Martian and maybe Scorpionic as well. He tells us that Christianity is ruled by Scorpio. So the gradual dissolution of the Orthodox Jewish faith. And I think it will be hard to perpetuate it, really, in the face of the modern discoveries and the proof of maybe survival of the soul and the reincarnation of the soul and the cooperation between Jesus and the Christ. How that will be proven, I don't know, but it will be a real revolutionary factor in the minds of so many in the Abrahamic religions. So there are those in the Jewish group that advance, and there are those who are clinging to the old. There are those in the Christian group who are filled with love, and there are those who cling to the often blood-curdling sayings of Muhammad and those who wrote down what they heard him say or thought they heard him say. And then this great revelation, whatever it may be. So to these three efforts, the hierarchy, superintended by the Christ, another two must be added, or of perhaps even greater importance. So five factors will be of importance when you look at the revelation which hierarchy is attempting to bring. The first one is the reaction of hierarchy itself to the new relationship established between it and Shambhala, and to that new direct and potent channel which has lately been induced by the efforts of the hierarchy and human invocativeness. Okay, so this is number two. It's an esoteric one. And number four, really, it is, but the first one of the two additional. So how will hierarchy react to the Shambhalic impress, the closer relationship to Shambhala, a potent channel, and a potent channel between, increasingly potent channel between hierarchy and demanding humanity. And the second activity is one leading to a much closer activity, relation rather, between the hierarchy and humanity. This will lead eventually to the externalization of certain of the ashrams. And later, you know, DK will talk about the masters of the externalizing ashrams. And later to the appearance of the hierarchy on earth, bringing the new revelation. Okay. So, let's say there are two more, in addition to the three mentioned. Just to review, so, you know, make these things bold so that we don't allow them to escape our cognition. Right. The reorganization of the world religions, and he is being realistic, saying, well, you know, perhaps it is not possible. The gradual dissolution of the Orthodox Jewish approach and the preparation for a revelation which will really inaugurate the new era. Now, probably that has not come. Probably we're not yet into the Aquarian Age, and the date given by the Tibetan, technically anyway, is 2117. And two more efforts are to be considered. The changes in hierarchy due to its relationship with Shambhala. Hierarchy has demanded it, evoked it, and human invocativeness has contributed, and also the much closer relationship of hierarchy and humanity. Okay, friends, well, this is the day for the consideration of the love energy in the pre-full moons, the three leading up to the Gemini full moon. So we're on page 545, and we began on page 541 with a very important instruction. So 541 to 545, and our date here is the 2nd again, and we'll be moving on to program number 66. So let me establish this, all these different colors. Well, you know, they're pretty much separators or lines of demarcation, so we can keep clear what the Tibetan is trying to give us. At least we've just learned what the Christ will be attempting to do, or did attempt to do at that time, 1 hour and approximately, 3 minutes, you know, maybe. And The end is from 541 to 545, and we'll be going on to number 6, and we don't know when. That will be probably too late tonight to continue, and it's from 545 onward. Well, we're making our way through the book, and I think it goes to about page 700 and something, so approximately another 150 pages to go. Okay, friends, let's think deeply about how we can cooperate with hierarchy in our own limited ways. Maybe the fourth initiation, the fourth meditation in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, will give us some hints about that and our role in the divine plan. So many blessings, lots of love, and we'll be resuming when it is possible to do so. And meanwhile, see you then.